Next to Normal is a rock musical written by Brian Yorkey and Tom Kitt. It centers Diana, a suburban woman struggling with bipolar disorder and the effect that it has on her husband and daughter. A true trailblazer in the increasingly popular sad suburban white families musical genre, Next to Normal grapples with grief, losing a child, mental illness, suicide, and the psychiatric treatment commonly known as electroshock therapy. It was an immense critical success, with 11 Tony nominations, and it joined the exclusive roster of musicals awarded the Pulitzer Prize. It also reached commercial success and a strong cult following in the angsty musical theater teens of 2009. My guest today is Angela Cody, a self-identified former angsty musical theater teen. I hope you enjoy our conversation about Next to Normal. Hello, Angela.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm out of the cold.
Yes. Angela showed up at the studio and she was like, I know I'm early, but can you let me in because I'm freezing to death?
It was just snowing and cold, and I kind of walked around the block more times than I wanted to count.
Why didn't you just text me?
Because I was like, I don't want to come here too early.
Oh, no, it's okay. And we're here now. And what are we talking about today?
We are talking about the lovely and angsty Next to Normal.
So why did you choose this musical?
Well, you gave me a few to choose from, and the 16-year-old inside of me pulling at my heartstrings was like, you need to do Next to Normal. You need to talk about Next to Normal because I was obsessed with Next to Normal in high school.
How did you first discover that?
Okay, so you know on iTunes.
I'm familiar with the platform.
When you go all the way down, or like when you've bought like an album or a few songs or something, you go all the way down and then it's the suggested for you.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's just cast album after cast album.
Yes.
Next to Normal popped up. And I'm like, we'll give this a try because it's not like Music Man or not anything like super that I was familiar with. I'm like, we'll give this a try. And then I listened to I'm Alive, and I was hooked. You're alive, I'm alive, and I'll show you
why I'm alive. Why'd you jump to that one first?
Because that one had the most stars on it. So I was like, that must be the most popular.
That's incredible. I feel like I've learned about a lot of new cast albums from Spotify because Spotify is very active discovery tools, but I've never heard of someone just like browsing through their iTunes recommendations.
But this was before Spotify.
Uh-huh.
So this was the old school way to find new music, was just scrolling through pages of iTunes.
Wow. That's, and what year was this?
Oh, maybe like 2012, 2013.
There's something about this that is just so pure. Okay, so you discover the musical, you're hooked on the cast album. Did you ever see it performed live?
I did when it came here, for the national tour. But I was supposed to see it in New York with the original cast, and my mom will never let me let this down till to this day, because we could have seen it with all of the original cast, but I just had to go see West Side Story. Apparently, the West Side Story revival was all that I wanted to see.
I mean, also a good production.
Exactly. So we saw it when it came back to Chicago.
Okay.
At Bank of America Theater, now home to Hamilton.
But Alice Ripley was still on it in the tour, right?
She was, but we had the understudy.
Oh, no.
Which she was amazing. But my mom almost, like, threw down with the front of house people because she was so upset that she didn't get to see Alice Ripley.
Oh,
I'm like,
no.
Mom, Alice Ripley's probably tired. She needs a day.
Leave Alice Ripley alone.
Exactly.
Yeah, I went to see Come From Away last year in New York. And almost the entire original cast was still in it, but Jen Colella was out that day.
Ooh.
So we had the understudy, who was still great, but I was like,
Jen Colella.
She's so great.
She's a queen. It took me forever to realize that she used, one of my guilty pleasure shows is High Fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me forever to realize that she was in that until I was like scrolling through pictures. And I was like, wait. And she's got like not her actual natural hair. And I'm like, oh my God, it's Jen Colella.
I don't know anything about High Fidelity, so.
High Fidelity. First, it was a movie.
Okay.
Made here in Chicago.
Oh.
because it's your typical, like, John Cusack, every pot stoner actor of that time.
Nice.
That, like, all made movies together. It's the ultimate breakup movie.
Sorry, I just Googled it, and the first sentence on the IMDb page, just is all one sentence because I think it got messed up.
Yeah.
John Cusack stars as Rob Gordon, Jack Black at an event for High Fidelity. That's not a sentence. Okay, we can talk about High Fidelity another time. We'll get more into, like, the plot nitty-gritty of this show mm-hmm. later. But I'm always curious about this. Like, when you would listen to the cast album, when you saw the show, did you already know everything that was going to happen? Or were you just, like, just knew the music and there were still surprises?
I think there were still surprises because when I was in high school, I was not the sharpest tool in the shed when it came to, like, understanding, like, that kind of material.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were some, like, minor, like, oh, this is actually what they're talking about that I didn't quite get. But, like, the big things, I was like, okay, I get.
Okay, yeah. I've had shows where, like, the first time I read the Wikipedia page for Spring Awakening, I was like, what? I had no idea. And that's a soundtrack that's specifically designed for you to not know what's happening while you're just listening to it, whereas I think Next to Normal has much more content in it.
Oh, absolutely.
This is a thing I've said maybe 100 times on this show, but I really love soundtracks where you can know what's going on.
Yep.
And they're specific to the show rather than very generalizable at Pasek and Paul. And I, you know, I love Jeremy Hansen, but I have a problem with that style of
Next to Normal came first.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into that. But before we get into that, which I think is a fascinating conversation, let's talk a little bit about the cast of this show, because it features the love of my life, Aaron Tveit.
Right?
Can we just talk about Aaron Tveit for a little while?
Oh my God, when we picked Next to Normal, I was like, all right, how much am I going to have to rein in my love for Aaron?
No, it's fine. I once traveled 6 hours and paid more money than I'm willing to admit to see him in a musical.
Which one?
Moulin Rouge.
You saw? I'm seeing it this summer.
His voice is so beautiful.
And he's grown out his hair.
Yes, it's so long now.
Like, yes, boy. Getting it. Grow out that hair. We do not like that short Graceland haircut.
Yeah, no, he looks great. And he's this show is from 2008. And so that's more than 10 years ago now. So he's very cute.
Gosh. Wow.
I mean, also other aspects of being 10 years ago, but mostly Aaron Tveit's very cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was not nominated for a Tony for this.
But he did flirt with Stocker Channing during the opening song of the Tony Awards that year, which is equally important.
Honestly, worth more than a Tony nomination.
He, like, takes her fur and, like, rubs it up and down him, and he's just standing there like, I'm Aaron. I know I'm good looking.
Yeah, he is just great in general, and he does a great job in this show. But it is hard for anyone to stand out next to the phenomenal performance of Alice Ripley.
Yes.
She is the main character of the show. She is in most scenes, and just does a stunning job with a very difficult part.
Oh, yeah. She just gets it from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't, like, you know how, like, some lead performers with an exhausting show like Next to Normal, where it does take, like, an emotional toll, you can see that they just go in and out of it. Like, they're not completely in it 100% of the time during the performance, because either it's just too exhausting or they think that they can take a slight break in this song because it's not completely about them. She's just all in all the time. I miss the mountains. Just cry every time I hear it.
Mm-hmm. She's a very distinctive voice, too.
Oh, yeah.
I think that it's very stylistic in a way, and it's not, like, if I was going to listen to
this is a weird sentence, but okay. Like, if a bunch of Broadway actresses put out a cover album of songs, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I would not pick Alice Ripley's above, like, many other, like, Broadway leading ladies. But I think that her job as a character works so well with what she does with her voice.
Oh, yes. Well, and I think she does have one of the more distinct Broadway, like, female Broadway voices.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're very much familiar with different female Broadway singers, you know what Alice Ripley sounds like, just like you know what Patti LuPone sounds like or what Streisand sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't sound like everybody else.
She also, I think, always sounds stressed out.
which works in this show.
Works extremely well for this show. That's just sort of the feeling I get from her voice. I'm like, I get it. Yeah, you're right.
Constant anxiety attack in the vocal cords.
Oh, God. The show also has, just in general, a very small cast. I mean, you have Alice Ripley at the center, Aaron Tveit as her son, J. Robert Spencer, and I don't know anyone's name.
Jen
Damiano.
Love her. Love her. Love her.
How do you feel about her?
I love her, personally.
Do you?
She was one of the first musical theater voices I heard that wasn't the size zero platinum blonde hair. Like, she didn't have that perceived musical theater look, and she didn't have that sound. And I think to this day, she's never played any one of those parts. Like, well, she went to Spider-Man.
Yeah, she played Mary Jane Watson in Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Which I definitely have seen.
Wait, what? You saw Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark and we're not talking about that?
Yeah. I did see that for Jen, but also I'm low-key obsessed with Reeve Carney, who plays Spider-Man.
Wow.
And I've seen him a few times in concert, and he does refer to me as his Spider-Man girl, because I'm the only person that knows about Spider-Man.
You're right.
I told him I saw it, and he's like, wait, you saw that? I didn't think anybody saw that.
Yeah, this woman's Broadway credits are Spring Awakening, Next to Normal, Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark, and American Psycho.
Yes.
That tells a story.
She's the queen of teenage angst.
Apparently so. Oh, my God. And she was in Gossip Girl. She's like had one episode of Gossip Girl she was in. What a career.
I think a lot of Broadway people had like cameos on Gossip Girl because everybody's got that Upper West Side look.
Yeah. Plus, it's you know, it's New York. We actually got people around. Was that the one that Aaron Tveit, like, had a character on?
Yes.
Okay, there we go. I've never seen it. I'm sorry.
He was with Blake Lively.
Yeah.
And was it cousins to Chase Crawford?
I, again, have never seen him.
Yes. He was a horrible person on that show.
Great. Great. Love it. One day someone, I'm sure that someone's already plotted out, like, the Broadway Gossip Girl convergence. But yeah, getting back to the cast a little bit. So this is a very small cast. So it's like the family unit. And then Natalie is the daughter's name and her boyfriend is a character. And then like the doctors.
Henry.
Yeah, Henry. And then the doctors that Alice Ripley, who has a name?
Diana. Yes.
The doctors that Diana sees in treating her disorder. And that's the cast.
Yep.
It's very small. But when you have a cast that small, it's like this is not a dancing piece. This is not like a big blowout.
No.
Like this is like we are relying on emotion. We are relying on the power of the individual voice to capture the audience. That's a very particular kind of show.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's many or at least not many that come to mind instantly that are the whole we're not relying on the big group. We're relying on mm-hmm. everybody like a puzzle.
Like a puzzle. Yeah, there's a few. It's like there are very few shows that don't have an ensemble.
Yeah.
Like Dear Evan Hansen doesn't.
Dear Evan Hansen's a decent. Like they don't have a designated ensemble, but their cast seems to be.
Their cast
seems to be growing. every time they're on Good Morning America.
Well, they have all their swings and understudies and stuff. But the actual principal cast members, there's like 8 characters. A similar kind of vibe. What a coincidence.
What a coincidence. Dear Evan Hansen is the same.
What I think is a little bit sad about Next to Normal, I mean, okay, the whole thing is very sad. Let me back up. What I think is a little sad about the context and production of Next to Normal is that it was in the same year as Billy Elliot, and so they didn't win that many Tonys.
Oh, R.I.P. Billy Elliot.
R.I.P.
But everybody forgot Billy Elliot.
Yeah, but
people have not forgotten Next to Normal.
I mean, I don't think people have totally... I do think that Next to Normal has had more staying power than Billy Elliot, which is interesting.
But I forget Billy Elliot on the regular.
I never saw it. I don't really know that much about it, but...
I saw it when they Midwesternized it, as I like to call it.
What does that mean?
With the national tour, when they take it to the Midwest and they take some of the more controversial things out. Now, remember, this was... 10 or something years ago, but mm-hmm. they would take what they perceived to be controversial out because they knew it wasn't going to sit well with the audience.
Wow, I love America.
Right, but they only did it. They didn't change it in New York. They didn't change it. They changed it specifically when they went to the Midwest.
Wow, I chose to move here. Okay, so... yeah, but so Billy Elliot won... a lot of the awards. Next Normal was still nominated for 10, and they still won 3, which is nothing to shake a stick at. But they ended up with score, orchestration, and the Tony for Alice Ripley.
Rightfully so.
I think that tracks. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But they did. They were nominated in most categories, which is still very impressive. Oh, and yeah, a little thing called the Pulitzer Prize for Drama.
Right.
It's very interesting to me that they won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama because the previous winner was Rent about 10 years previously, which was also directed by Michael Greif.
He might know what he's doing with that kind of material.
He knows how to pick them.
I'd say Rent is kind of similar to Next to Normal where it's like they rely – it's – I mean, it's not like a huge ensemble, but there's not that many like – main characters, and they kind of rely on like the individuals as well as like having chemistry to come together.
Yeah, I think that Ren is a little different in that I think it's definitely an ensemble piece more than like a Next to Normal is, where it's very clearly a main character and then secondary characters, whereas I think that Rent has more centralized but also like is a lot more spread out in terms of arcs and songs.
Heavy similarities.
Oh, yeah. Listen, they're in my lineage notes. let's get into that in a minute. There's one thing I want to talk about before we get into the more plot-based conversations, which is the Twitter campaign. I just learned about this.
What is this?
Okay. In friggin' 2008, wow. Which is so – that was very, very early on Twitter – they did a viral Twitter campaign in which they posted every line of the show one tweet at a time. And they posted it like as if the characters were tweeting it. So it's all from the Next Normal account, but it would say like Diana, and then it would be the line. And it would say Natalie, and then it would be the line. And then for the things that didn't have a spoken line, they would have to have like – they would insert internal monologues and like internal thoughts that would kind of explain what was happening. This is amazing. And this was happening so early in the life of the social internet in general, but especially Twitter. And it was...
Could you imagine if Next to Normal came out, like, now? Oof. With the social media presence?
Would it be called Dear Evan Hansen?
How many times can we make that joke and but it's like, still funny?
That is, that kind of is the difference between those two shows, though. But okay. but yeah, so and then this thing, it made him so popular. They had hundreds of thousands of followers. They actually were like the 200th most followed account on Twitter entirely. Yes. They like had more followers than Stephen Colbert. I saw the specific shout out. And this one, which is so amazing, like for something that was so early And they were really on it, which I think was very cool. And of course, it served as this amazing marketing campaign, because they never like got on there and were like, here's some discount tickets or whatever. It was just like this show happening, but people got so into it that they went and bought tickets, because of course they did. The show was very financially successful. It recouped its investment, made tons of money. That is pretty rare.
Right.
Just in general. So I'm sure that that was
What's it like for a show to make money?
Who knows? You get like one of those a year. I feel like that is such an amazing indication of the kind of people who were making the show. Like, they were young, they were interested in very new things that were happening, and they were looking. It was like that was something literally no one had done before, because it was so early on the stage of what Twitter was. Like, I see some screenshots of it. I just learned about this like an hour ago. I'm very into it. But I saw screenshots of it. It's Twitter from 2008 and it looks terrible. And and even if you look on their Twitter account now, like, they don't really post anymore.
Right.
They had some promotion for If Then, because it's made by the same people. They still have 750,000 followers on Twitter, and their bio is next to normal, first Broadway show to perform on Twitter. Also, okay, I just noticed something. You can link a website on Twitter, and their website goes back to their Twitter account. Oh, wait, no, it doesn't. It tries to link to the Next to Normal website, but it says Next to Normal/Twitter, but that doesn't go anywhere. It's a broken link. Yikes.
Okay, I can't find their Next to Normal Twitter page.
It's at N2N. Like the numeral 2 Broadway. It's not verified. They haven't posted since 2014. Like, this is not an active thing. So clearly they didn't keep up with, you know, the cool kids keeping up with Twitter.
Oh, there she is.
But at the time, they were happening.
Dang.
Well, in April of 2011, they were performing in Chicago.
So that's when I saw it.
There you go.
And so I must have gotten into it like 2010-ish,
yeah,
around there. Because I know I had been into it for a while, and then my mom's like, all right, we'll go if you stop talking about how pretty Erin Tveit is.
Never.
I'm like, am I wrong? And then I showed her a picture of him, and she's like, this is the greatest creation on the planet.
Erin Tveit, come on my show. Okay. So to get into a little bit of the background of this, it was originally created as like a 10-minute homework assignment that the creators, Brian Yorke and Tom Kitt, made for like a assignment. And it was a 10-minute musical called Feeling Electric, because they were really into, well, they just learned, I guess, about electroshock therapy, and they were like, what is this? And so they made these musicals, and it kept getting expanded, and it was very focused on electroshock therapy and this woman, and it was extremely critical of the treatment. And then eventually it was expanded into a full-length musical and a sort of expansion of the characters from there into a full family and a full story to cover 2.5 hours. But yeah, it started as Few and Electric, which is a terrible name.
Yeah.
Good job, whoever changed the name. While I was reading this, it was kind of fun to read the names of some of the people who were involved in the production along the way as they developed it. Mm-hmm. Here's just a smattering of some of the people who were at one point played characters in Next to Normal. Annalee Ashford, Anthony Rapp, Skylar Astin. Although that's a citation needed, so maybe that's just someone dreamcasting, but okay. Norbert Leo Butts, you know, just casual people. Skylar Astin played Henry.
Oh, that makes so much sense. In what world? I love Skylar Astin, but in what world is he Gabe?
Yeah, no, he was Henry. Anthony Rapp once played the Doctor.
I see that.
Yeah, I can see that. And then, of course, when in the off-Broadway cast, Brian D'Arcy James played the husband, Dan. Why are you clutching your heart?
I love Brian D'Arcy James.
He's really great. But he played the husband, and then he left.
He's the ultimate dad of Broadway.
He really is. What a dad. And but then he came back and he was the second Dan on Broadway. And so yeah. I'm sure he left and he was like, gotta go. And then he was like, oh, crap.
Gotta go do Shrek.
Gotta go do Shrek.
I don't even know if the timeline matches up. I just know that was something
I think it
in
I,
the close proximity I, of the ballpark of the time.
I think it might have literally been to do Shrek. I think they were in the same season.
Let me go fall in love with Sutton Foster and then I'm going to be right back.
I can't imagine looking at your career and being like, I'm going to leave this weird independent original musical to go star in Shrek. Fair career decision.
Money.
And then you're like, oh, crap. This one got the awards. Although he actually won a bunch of awards for playing Shrek as well, which is hysterical.
That show is so weird.
I've never actually seen it, but I've heard it is quite good.
It used to be on Netflix for the longest time.
I know. I was like, I got to watch Shrek someday, and I didn't get around to it.
I gotta watch Shrek, but I never have that much free time on my hands.
I've never been that bored. I'm sorry. Shrek is a good movie, and it has Sutton Foster in it, so how bad could it be?
Right.
Remember when they made SpongeBob into a musical and it was good?
Never saw it.
I didn't either, but, like, the music is good, and people said it was a good musical, so I don't know.
The music is good, and Tina Landau is just a genius.
Yes. I like how we've name-dropped, like, 1,000 other musicals over the course of this episode. That's what I love, though. Some episodes are very focused on the musical at hand, and sometimes we're just nerds.
I'll talk about any musical. I'm like, yes, let me name-drop.
But let's really get into this. Because this is a thing we've been making jokes about the whole time, but I really want to talk about.
Dear Evan Hansen.
Dear Evan Hansen. Well, let me set the stage briefly. Okay. Next to Normal came out in 2008. It had started to be written many years before, and it was clearly very inspired by Rent and sort of like the rock opera, rock musical lineage. It also has drawn a lot of comparisons with Spring Awakening, which came out a few years previously and I think was also definitely an inspiration. I've never seen two shows that are so clearly draw from each other, or like one draws from the other, than Dear Evan Hansen drawing from Next to Normal. Would you like to have an opening statement about this?
Okay, let me preface that I hate Dear Evan Hansen.
Good start.
I have not seen it, but I do not like it for the sole reason of I think it's so close to Next to Normal that it's slightly cringy how close it is. It's like when every single movie musical like comes out that it's just so close that I'm like, why does this exist? Like, I get it's an original thought, like, and I appreciate those musicals that are like an original concept, but it's so close that I'm like, is this original or did you just watch a bootleg way too many times?
So my experience with this, so I loved Dear Evan Hansen. We did a whole episode about it, but I do have a lot of feelings about it. I watched Next to Normal after I had already seen Dear Evan Hansen, and I definitely watched it legally and not on a bootleg, of which there are several on YouTube. Original cast, very accessible. Didn't watch those. And honestly, the entire time, I was like, how many times did Pasek and Paul watch Next to Normal? So many.
Right. I'm like, Tom Kitt and Brian Yorkey did this whole, like, edgy, like, funky pop musical 10 years ago. This is not new. I get that you're trying to convey another issue that's slightly different than Next to Normal, but that's still also slightly similar to, it's like they made an entire musical about Natalie's plotline.
So for those that are less familiar with either Next to Normal, Dear Evan Hansen, a very brief sort of intersection of why they're so incredibly related is Next to Normal is the story of a woman with bipolar disorder and her husband and her child and how they deal with that as a family. There's lots of intersections there. It's very focused on this family. Also, now we're just going to get right into spoiler territory, and I'm going to do a brief aside to talk about the spoiler because I have a funny story about it. So here's the thing. This woman has two children. Aaron DeVate plays Gabe, her first son. He's dead.
Way to drop the ball. spoiler alert.
Just to like really roll into it. Here's the thing. It's possible to know this and still be surprised. I am proof of this. Because I knew that Aaron Tveit, I knew that the story was about this woman who is seeing her son, but he has passed away. I thought he died in the musical. And then she's hallucinating him. He dies when he's like 2 years old. He's a hallucination the entire musical. And I was like, whoa, when the reveal happened. What? So there's that. I just can't believe I still managed. I was still unspoiled even though I knew the spoiler.
Also, the reveal is the most chaotic thing. Because the big reveal is the birthday cake, right? Yeah. It just left me so confused because I'm like, that's how you're revealing it?
Yeah. What? Because the scene in question is she's been interacting with him for a good portion of the musical.
Yeah.
And then she comes out with a birthday cake during family dinner for his birthday. And her husband and child are devastated, just distraught because they realize that she has gone back to her hallucinations.
And Henry's just so confused.
Yeah, her daughter's boyfriend is like, what's happening?
I didn't know you had a brother. I don't anymore.
Oh, my heart. But yeah, that's also part of the reason why the Henry character, like that's why Henry's there in that scene is because they need to be able to say out loud, like to explain to someone what's happening. Because the audience, like that's the thing is like the audience does not know until that moment. So even if you're me. And then in Dear Evan Hansen is the story of a boy named Evan, and a classmate of his named Connor commits suicide at the beginning of a story. He actually is alive at the beginning of the musical, but through the rest of the story, Evan interacts with him as not as a hallucination, but more like he is aware that Connor is deceased, but like the actor comes out and interacts with Evan as sort of like an internal conversation. That's a whole thing. As well as, like, also grappling with the themes of family and mental health and a lot of very similar concepts. And so they are definitely different directions, but they're very much, like, it is very clear that Dear Evan Hansen is significantly inspired by Next to Normal.
Yeah. Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
I mean, gosh, even part of their set looks the same.
Yeah.
And I think, like, if Next to Normal, like, was made now, they would also, like, have the screens and, like, it would be the exact same thing. I think the big difference is the, like, the time gap in between these shows being made and alongside of that, the understanding that people have with mental health at both points in time.
That's interesting.
Because you think how... I mean, even like myself, like how oblivious you were about all of the components of mental health 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I was 12.
Well,
10 years ago.
You were also 12. But I think like as a culture.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's one major difference. I think that because that's what we were talking about earlier is like the social media aspect of Next to Normal's Twitter campaign is so fascinating to me, partly because Dear Evan Hansen, even in the show, in the production, is very revolved around social media.
Yeah.
And the set design very much incorporates that. So it's like, I'm sure that that would have been an element of Next to Normal had it existed at the time in the same way that it does now. I think that maybe the two major differences between the shows are, one, like the cultural aspect, like you were saying, cultural differences in time, technology, like understanding of mental health, and also the age. Like this is a story of an adult woman.
Yeah.
And I think it is aimed at adults. And I think Dear Evan Hansen is a story of a teenager and is aimed at teenagers.
As much as every teenager became obsessed with Next to Normal when it came out, even though it didn't necessarily apply to us directly.
Mm-hmm. Because I think maybe that also is like, maybe that is why when the next iteration of this came out, it was targeted towards a younger demographic. Because I think that people saw Next to Normal as something that was for adults. And then when it came out, it resonated with teenagers. And it was very much like for the teen angst thing, but also as this like, but also like for these conversations about mental health and like coming to grips with that. And like, Nobody Understands Me, My Family's Messed Up, like all of those things.
The song Everything Else. Who didn't relate hardcore to that at like 15 and 16? My goodness.
Oh, yes. Superboy and the Invisible Girl.
Yes. Like those songs came on and I was like, oh my gosh, like someone like gets it without, and as much as I love Spring Awakening, without it going to the incredibly dark, dark place, mm-hmm. it's still, it can be relatable without going to the extreme.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, wow, I'm 12 and these people understand me so much. I'm not making fun of you. And with Spring Awakening, too, like this drew a lot of direct comparisons to Spring Awakening because it came out just a few years later.
Yeah.
And it was, while Spring Awakening was less directly about like mental health, it was, but it like wasn't like the focus the way that it is
right.
for Next to Normal. But it had a very, I'm sure that there's a huge overlap in the people who like the shows.
I think Next to Normal talks about the mental awareness side, where Spring Awakening talks about like the action and events that could happen to a person that would lead to like depressive episodes and anxiety and other mental health disorders.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Like that, it talks more about like the actions before like your mind has time to process like a horrific thing that happened to you. And then Next to Normal is like, yeah, let's talk about that event 18 years later.
That is a really unique aspect, I think, of this show as well, is that it is not the event. It is it is 15, 16 years later. And I think that that is a really important aspect just in itself, is like these issues like don't go away when the curtains close.
Right.
They are something that, especially with, like, she specifically has bipolar disorder in the show, and that is an incurable condition.
Right.
It can be managed, it can be treated, but it cannot be cured with what we know in the current state. And so, like, that, it's not, this is not a show that's going to, is possible to be tied up in a bow.
Right. That's why I love it. I love the shows where it's not a perfect, I mean, don't get me wrong, I do love the shows that are a big happy ending, but I appreciate the bold choices that musicals take when it's like, all right, we're not going to be all perfect at the end. This is going to stay slightly messed up because not everything wraps up in a perfect bow. This is life.
Yeah. It's sort of the ending of like, things aren't okay. Well, it, things aren't fine, but they're okay.
Right.
Like, it's not, because like the ending of the show, it is hopeful, but it's not good.
It's not the extreme of Spring Awakening.
Yeah.
Like, they're alive.
Everyone's alive. Well, except for Gabe.
Right. Everyone's alive that started alive in the top of the show.
Yeah, which was an achievement.
Yes.
Like, for this story, it truly is. Yeah. So cheerful. So happy. on a meta level with that narrative, I do think that there is something, and I haven't done too much in-depth research or even, like, really grappled with how I feel about this. I do think there is something a little off that this story is a very intense, graphic, personal story about a woman's mental health that was written by two young men. I'm not trying like cancel Next to Normal or anything like that, but there's just something that's a little off to me that seems to be like these two men, and they I believe like have said like they do not personally like have any of these experiences themselves, are speaking to an experience that is very outside their own lives. I just think that's a little bit off.
That definitely is. I honestly never thought about it like that, but I completely, that, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that everybody experiences this kind of emotional content differently, and I think some people draw so much value from it, and other people probably draw a lot of pain from it, but I know that, like, a lot of people who do have these very visceral experiences in their own life really love and relate to this show. But I also think that it comes off almost as like, why are you so fascinated with this woman's pain that you wanted to write a whole musical about it when it's not yours?
Sorry, my mind is blown right now.
Yeah, I don't know. And like, I'm not the expert to say like this is what they did wrong, or even like that they necessarily did anything wrong, because I don't think we should only be limited to like telling specifically our own like only people can only write autobiographies from now on out.
But at the same time, it's a little off that you're so fascinated by another woman's pain.
And like the whole question of like this story is so much about like her as a mother and like her as a like a middle-aged woman written by two guys who were in college.
That's weird.
I'm sorry, did I make you uncomfortable with the music?
No, I'm just like, wait, this makes, like, it doesn't make sense. Why? Like, now I want to know why. Love the show, but why?
Yeah. I think there's always value to be drawn from questioning who wrote this and why did they write it. And I don't know these guys, and for all I know, like, this experience.
But then they did it with If Then, too.
Did they? I don't know anything about If Then.
If Then is, it's centralized around Adele Dazeem and Idina Menzel. And it's basically, it's without spoiling too much, it's at the top of the show, it's a, well, what would happen if you made this choice in your life? And how would this small choice affect your life big time?
Okay.
And so half of the show, she's, I think it's Beth or Kate. It's some like really generic name that she has for both characters. And it's like half of the, they go back and forth, but it's like one character, she picked her career over her love. And then the other one is she picked the relationship over the career. And it kind of goes back and forth of like, how such a small choice in your life can impact you like big time. But again, it's so centralized around not a middle-aged woman because she doesn't have kids yet, but like I'd say like in her 30s and her pain.
Love that pain. And that's not the only thing these two guys have ever done.
Well, sure, like, they're doing Magic Mike.
They're doing Magic Mike. You know, Tom Kitt did Bring It On. You know, yeah. Like, there's, if it was like five musicals all about this, then I'd be like, yeah, something stinks here. And like, for all I know, like, this is drawn very significantly from like the women in their life or like the people with mental health struggles in their life and stuff like that. And like, they're the people who write musicals. So sure. Not everybody can write musicals.
Right.
Before we get to the lightning round, I want to just spend a few minutes talking a little bit more about the music. We've sort of mentioned a bunch of the songs, but just in general, like as mentioned, this is a rock musical, rock pop musical, which while are getting more common, and I feel like we've covered every single one that's been made, they still are very, especially in 2008, very much not the norm. So it was fun and exciting. But yeah, what is your favorite song, do you think, in this?
Oh, gosh. I want to say, I'm Alive is not my, maybe. I'd say I'm Alive is my favorite for selfish reasons.
Okay.
But I remember, and I don't know if it's my favorite, but I remember always being stuck on You Don't Know.
Mm-hmm.
The one that Alice Ripley sings, probably because that was one of the more rockier songs, but it's the essential, like, her yelling at all the doctors, you don't know what I'm going through, you don't understand this, you keep trying to fix me,
yeah,
and you don't even know what's wrong with me in the first place.
And it's also her yelling at her husband,
yeah,
saying you think you, like, you don't even feel the same grief that I do. You don't even know.
Yeah.
I think that there's a four song selection in the first act, which is You Don't Know, I Am the One, Superboy and the Invisible Girl, and I'm Alive. And that four song selection is just one of the best, like 15 minute segments of any musical ever, maybe.
Every time I hear I Am the One, I just think about the reprise.
Yeah.
Hi, Dad gets me every time.
Oh my god. No, for real though. Oh my god. I want to talk about that moment in particular. So in this musical, the entire time Gabe only, they don't say his name, first of all.
Right.
And
I like that.
Yeah. And he only interacts with Diana, his mother. And it's not until near the very end when Dan finally says his son's name and, like, reveals that he, like, they have an interaction. And it's basically this reveal that, like, he also is haunted by this grief. And he also, I'm not sure if it's supposed to be taken that he literally has the same hallucinations or if it's just more, like, emotionally he is also, like, haunted in the same way.
I think he's haunted in a... I think he's I don't want to say he's haunted more emotionally, but I think he's haunted in a different way. Like, mm-hmm. I think he's maybe not equally as haunted as Diane or Diana. I'm never going to figure out which one is actually her name. Alice Ripley. I think just because he doesn't have as much hallucinations as she does doesn't mean he's not feeling the pain.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is kind of like one of the struggles between them is it's this the separation of her with this mental health problem, but also I think that very much isolates her and makes her think that she is alone and that no one can understand. And while he doesn't have that same experience as her, he does have the same grief.
Yeah.
Which I don't think she ever fully understands through the musical.
Because he's never outward about it, which is why I like it a lot, because they display different characters with different types of mental health disorders. Mm-hmm. Because, like, Alice Ripley has a more outward and a more, I don't want to say severe, but...
It impedes with her daily life.
Right. And where Dan does have grief. He is coping with a lot of things, but he's a type of person that where he's not going to outwardly say anything about it. He's just going to silently deal with it himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's no communication in between the two characters where it's like, yes, I'm also, they would have just talked.
Yeah, well, that's because that's also, like, going back to this is not right after their child has died. This is 16 years later. So I'm sure, like, the way that he has processed this grief, like, it has been processed, but it is now attached to, like, the very difficult, painful thing that his wife is going through.
Yeah.
With bipolar disorder. And so those two things are all wrapped up together. And so instead of being able to, like, share the ongoing loss of this, everything gets focused in and distorted in that way. Also, just a moment for Natalie, who we haven't talked about too much, but one, she has very good songs and
love her,
and she just she is the daughter, and like, and so she also feels the effects of her mother's illness extremely strongly because of how could you not, like, she's like
her entire life is the aftermath of her brother's death.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting because, like, she doesn't remember her brother at all.
Right.
Were they even alive at the same time?
She wasn't.
Yeah.
Because they make a reference to the fact that they had Natalie kind of as a do-over.
Mm-hmm.
And she even says, and she knows.
Mm-hmm.
So Natalie knows. Like, she was planned as a do-over from when her brother died.
Yeah, so that'll mess you up.
Yeah.
She's got a lot on her plate, just in everything.
But Henry's there.
And Henry's there. She's got a nice boy who has his own issues, but supports her.
My initial image is, like, Henry's this nice boy that deals, or that, like, helps Natalie through her stuff. But then I remember that he's got his own stuff, too. Like, he's just an angsty 16-year-old boy.
Ah, teenagers.
The world is burning. Why should I do my math homework? Teenager. He's like the less extreme Melchior.
Be hard to be a more extreme Melchior.
Moritz.
There we go. But yeah, if we said the soundtrack of this is very strong, I think, and it's I think a lot of the story is conveyed through the soundtrack, and everyone does a great job. And also, you know, it might happen to be available to watch on the internet. Also, there's a production coming to right outside of Chicago very soon. Writers Theater, and Glencoe is doing it.
Ooh, yes.
I might go see it.
Yeah. Well, we have to now.
We have to. It'll be a field trip. We do field research. But yeah, let's wrap this up with our lightning round.
Okay.
So some of these might have come across a little bit already, but we'll get into it. So what is your favorite song musical?
Favorite song? Tie between I'm Alive and You Don't Know.
All right. And what is your favorite line?
Henry's line, and crazy is perfect.
Crazy is perfect, and fucked up is perfect, so I will be perfect.
I could be perfect for you.
Aw. We didn't really talk about the song. It's very pretty.
It's so cute.
In a very teen-exy way.
Yes.
Your favorite character?
Natalie.
And if you could play a character, who would you want to play?
Gabe.
Nice.
Just because I want to try swinging on the pole. It looks like fun.
You might meet her and debate out of it. You never know.
Just bonus points.
Yeah. Who would you recommend go see this show?
I know that we said that it's like more directed for adults, but I think I would recommend it to not like young teenagers, but like 16 to like early college, that whole, that kind of area, kind of like not as early as when I first started getting into it, because I think I was way too young and I didn't understand most of it until I got older. But I think because it initially was made for, like, with the thought process for teenagers, that teenagers, they get it. I mean, even if they don't get all of the grief of losing a child, they at least get like Natalie and Henry's and even some of the parents' issues, but not all of it.
And finally, if you could combine this musical with one other one, what would you pick?
I don't want to pick Dear Evan Hansen just because we talked about it for
It's already been combined with Dear Evan Hansen. It's called Dear Evan Hansen.
Can I combine it with one that we've already talked about?
Yeah.
I would combine it with Rent, from the sheer perspective of there is an overarching story, but also every main character has their own plot and has their own stories throughout the show, and they all tie together to make that general big overarching story.
There we go. Well, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
All right, and thank you all for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Corner of the Sky. You can find us online at theincomparable.com/COTS or follow us on Twitter @COTS Podcast. If you'd like, you could also review us on Apple Podcasts or give us a star in Overcast.